Coming up on Fronteras, the truckers who transport goods across our southern border are often stuck in long lines.
Before, we used to cross in 5 minutes, 10 minutes. Now it takes us about 3 hours, 2 hours.
Fronteras reporter Monica Ortiz Uribe hitches a ride with one of those truckers to find out how wait times affect binational trade. Many immigrants deported from the U.S. leave children behind. Thousands of these children are in foster care, and deported parents face big challenges to get them back. We'll hear one woman's story and how the immigration reform bill being debated in the Senate might address the problem of separated families. But first, the news. This is Fronteras, a journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras was created via an unprecedented multimedia collaboration among 7 public radio stations and funded by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting as part of its local Journalism Center initiative. I'm Crystal Chavez. Tijuana newspapers have reported a recent spike in violent crime in the city. Between Monday and Tuesday of this week, local authorities registered 7 homicides. Joe Replegal from our Fronteras desk has more.
More than 250 people have been killed in Tijuana so far in 2013. That's a 25% increase compared to the same time span last year. The spike comes shortly after American judicial authorities in San Diego declared the end of the Arellano Felix drug trafficking organization. The Arellano Felix group had ruled the drug trade in Tijuana and fueled much of the violence there. But other traffickers have moved in to take over the business. Experts say the powerful Sinaloa cartel now largely controls the area, but it's using a different method, says Tijuana journalist Vicente Calderon.
The big drug trafficker organization used to have their own people working on the field. Now it looks like the big drug traffickers, the drug cartels, are kind of hiring local cells, like freelancers, that are moving the drugs or selling drugs on the neighborhoods.
Calderon says these street dealers are the perpetrators and victims of most of the violence in Tijuana these days. Still, violent crime is much lower in the city than during its height from 2008 to 2010, when drug traffickers battled in the streets and hung bodies from bridges. Experts have speculated that a truce among high-level traffickers is behind the relative calm, and spikes like the one this week could be anomalies. In San Diego, I'm Jill Replogle.
Texas state law enforcement is beefing up its efforts to fight Mexican drug cartels away from the border and in the state's larger cities. Texas Public Radio's David Martin Davies reports the cartels are using big cities such as Dallas-Fort Worth as hubs for cartel activity.
Mexican drug cartels are expanding their reach all across Texas and using their networks to move illegal drugs and people across the nation and shipments of cash and weapons back into Mexico. The Texas Department of Public Safety is also moving to counter the cartels. That's according to Tom Vinger, DPS spokesperson.
The cartels aren't just a border problem any longer. They are a problem for all of Texas, specifically the major cities, and really remain a constant danger not only in Texas but beyond.
The DPS has labeled the cartels as the most significant organized crime threat to Texas. 6 of the 8 cartels currently have command and control networks operating in the state. Vinger says the cartels are also cementing ties with established prison gangs in Texas, which increases the reach of their criminal activities. The DPS estimates that the Lone Star State has more than 100,000 gang members. David Martin Davies, Texas Public Radio News.
The Senate is taking up the immigration bill this week amid demands from members of Congress to strengthen border security. But there are also calls for a reevaluation of the Border Patrol's use of force. Investigations into these cases are hidden from public view and can drag on for years. From the Fronteras desk, Michel Marisco reports.
Daida Elena lives in a small mobile home park in Nogales, Arizona. The wooden fence that surrounds her property sways in the breeze of a windy morning. Some of her youngest grandchildren play in her neat living room. She shushes them and sends them off to one of the bedrooms. And then she talks about her dead grandson, Jose Antonio.
Y lo peor es que que la manera en que lo mataron.
9 months ago, the teenage boy was shot and killed by U.S. Border Patrol agents. The agents said they were defending themselves against a hail of rocks being thrown at them from the Mexican side of the border. Police reports describe a hectic few minutes where federal agents came under attack and then an agent and possibly two fired into Mexico. Jose Antonio was hit 6 times. Elena and her family say the boy was innocent. A witness reports he wasn't even with the group attacking the agents.
It becomes real chaotic, and it happens very quickly is what people don't realize is they get into a high-response situation. Everything happens very quickly. I mean, the whole thing could be over in less than 3 minutes from start to ending, and it seems like it's taking hours.
Terry Kirkpatrick retired as an Immigration and Customs Enforcement official in 2010. He's been following the case closely ever since it happened.
I would be questioning if it was one of my agents as to why that happened.
In the past year, the Border Patrol has come under criticism for its use of force policy. Since 2010, agents have killed 17 people along the Mexican border. The policy states agents can shoot to defend themselves if they feel their life is at risk. And in each case, agents said they were being attacked, some with rocks or cars, or some with physical assault. But it's not always clear if the person shot was actually involved in assaulting the agent. That's especially true in the 7 cases involving an agent firing into Mexico. Under the Senate's immigration reform bill, proposed changes to the policy are small. Within 6 months, Homeland Security and the Department of Justice must establish a policy for accepting and investigating complaints. That happens already, but at a snail's pace. The overall policy will also be reviewed. But the secretive aspects of the investigations remain unchanged. In the October case, neither the public nor the family of the dead teenager know the names of the agents involved. Michael Nicely was chief of the Border Patrol in Tucson for 3 years. He says the lack of transparency in Border Patrol shooting cases is what leads to the criticism.
The public understands that Border Patrol agents have to use deadly force from time to time, but they do not understand why the government doesn't tell them these were the circumstances. Our agent did exactly what he was supposed to do, and unfortunately someone was killed.
For Taide Elena, it's been 9 months since the killing. To this day, the FBI has the case, but has not contacted the family or told them anything about the investigation.
Nada, completamente nada.
She says the lack of learning anything about the case hurts the most right now. Reporting from Nogales, Arizona, I'm Michelle Marisco.
When it comes to the southern border, Congress wants to put up a stoplight, stop the flow of drugs, stop illegal immigration, and stop the terrorists. Last year, the U.S. spent more on securing the border than it did on all federal law enforcement combined. Some argue that needs to change. In a 2-part series, Monica Ortiz Uribe reports on how the lockdown at the border chokes billions of dollars worth of legitimate traffic.
Alejandro Rivera is a patient man. Not exactly a quality you'd expect in a big rig trucker. That's because he probably does more waiting than actual driving. Rivera chauffeurs goods between the U.S.-Mexico border for an American logistics company based in El Paso, Texas. On a good day, he'll accomplish 2 round trips, rarely adding more than 70 miles to his odometer.
Since the 9/11, everything changed. Before, we used to cross in 5 minutes, 10 minutes. Now it takes us about 3 hours, 2 hours, because of the long lines.
That's long lines at the border crossing, a complaint you'll hear from San Diego to Brownsville. Some 5 million trucks per year are subject to costly delays as a result of rigorous security measures put in place in the last decade. These delays affect the timeliness of a trucker's delivery. And for their customers, time is money.
And those big lines have economic costs, billions of dollars a year in lost growth for the United States and Mexico.
Chris Wilson studies the economics of trade for the Woodrow Wilson Center in Washington, D.C. He says trade between the U.S. and Mexico quintupled in the last 20 years. Some 6 million U.S. jobs depend on trade with Mexico. We're talking companies like Dell and Ford, as well as smaller businesses that make medical devices or auto parts. Just how long are wait times at the border? Let's go back to our trucker, Alejandro Rivera. I decided to ride with him on one of his daily deliveries to see for myself.
Israel saliéndole con la idata 008.
At the start of our journey, Rivera alerts his dispatcher. We begin at a factory in the Mexican border city of Juarez.
So we're just leaving now. What time is it?
It's 1:30 p.m.
Rivera is carrying a load of nude plastic mannequins. That's right, mannequins, like the ones you see in the store at the mall. They're made by factory workers in Juarez who earn $10 a day. Rivera will transport them to a warehouse in El Paso, about 20 miles away. From there, the mannequins will ship across the U.S. to stores like Nike and JCPenney.
This is the moment that you have to go down.
At the international bridge, I have to leave Alejandro and cross by foot. Security protocol won't allow anyone other than the driver inside the truck.
So Alejandro and his truck are just making it to the entrance of the Mexican customs side. It's just after 2 o'clock. We'll see how long it takes for him to come out the other side.
This is where the waiting begins. Halfway up the bridge, I call a supervisor to get an update on our driver.
Bueno. Hola, Marisela. Soy Monica.
Turns out, U.S. Customs ordered his truck to be X-rayed. After that, an officer will unload half his cargo and inspect the trailer for anything illegal. The company Rivera works for has a special certification called CTPAT that usually allows trucks expedited passage. Only about 1% of their cargo goes through lengthy searches like this one. Before, when Rivera worked for a non-certified company, he says he faced prolonged inspections every day.
It is 3:30, exactly an hour and a half after we first started.
All commercial traffic at this crossing must clear 4 separate agencies: Mexican Customs, American Customs, the U.S. Department of Transportation, and the Texas Department of Public Safety. In total, our driver clocks in at 2.5 hours.
Sometimes the customers don't understand all the process that we have to make. They want their load.
While most agree that inspections are necessary, trade advocates argue that an overemphasis on security is hurting economic development. In El Paso, I'm Monica Ortiz Uribe.
There's still more Fronteras coming up. We're getting a sense of how long lines at commercial border crossings hurt by national trade.
Well, a lot of the stuff is time sensitive, and the delays on the bridge hinder both us in getting our job done here and then plus the final customer.
Up next, find out how much those delays are costing the U.S. economy and how Congress is responding. Stay tuned. This is Fronteras. I'm Crystal Chavez. At our southern border, time is money. The U.S. and Mexico trade more than $1 billion in goods every day. All that commerce comes through land crossings that spread from California to Texas. The problem is, once that commercial traffic reaches the border, it runs into long bottlenecks. In part two of our series on delays at the border, Monica Ortiz Uribe reports on the economic consequences and reaction in the U.S. Congress.
A man on a forklift hauls long cardboard boxes from a truck trailer into a warehouse. Inside those boxes are plastic mannequins, the kind you see in clothing stores. These mannequins just made a 5-hour journey from a factory in the Mexican border city of Juarez. They spent 2.5 of those hours stuck at the international bridge that links Juarez to El Paso, Texas.
At this warehouse, we receive the material that is manufactured in Mexico. And from this location, it gets distributed worldwide.
Sergio Cano is the manager here. His warehouse is no more than 20 miles from the factory across the border, but deliveries like the one he just received can take hours.
Well, a lot of the stuff is time sensitive, and the delays on the bridge hinder both us in getting our job done here and then plus the final customer.
Delays cut into everyone's bottom line. A late delivery to an auto manufacturer in Michigan, for example, can shut down an entire production line.
So I'll have sometimes guys here working overtime waiting for this material to cross, and then we usually have to pay the driver a wait time while he's waiting here. It can get very expensive.
Just how expensive? A study by Bloomberg calculated that delays at the border cost the U.S. economy $7.8 billion in 2011. Too much for freshman Congressman Beto O'Rourke, whose district is in El Paso. He thinks the country needs to look at the border in a new way.
The preponderance of the focus has been on securing the border, locking it down, controlling it.
In the last decade, as border security has become a priority, the number of Border Patrol officers more than doubled, while the number of customs officers remains about the same.
We're trying to show that there needs to be a balance, and we also need to facilitate trade, mobility, and the flow of people who end up spending their money in our communities.
So O'Rourke is on a mission to educate his fellow U.S. representatives on the importance of cross-border trade nationwide.
There seems to be a direct correlation with how close you are physically to the U.S.-Mexico border and your understanding of the priority of trade in our economy.
O'Rourke and his staff rove the Capitol halls, distributing information to select delegations, like the one from Montana.
Montana alone has more than $80 million in trade with Mexico, and that supports 22,000 jobs.
As a member of the House Homeland Security Committee, O'Rourke added 9 trade-friendly amendments to the committee's latest border security bill. The amendments call for things like technology that could speed up commercial traffic, as well as the creation of a system to better measure border wait times. The bill may be absorbed into a larger House bill on immigration.
We really need a sort of, you know, multi-pronged approach.
Chris Wilson studies trade and economics at the Woodrow Wilson Center in Washington, D.C. He says the solution to reducing the border bottleneck has 3 main components: updating infrastructure at the ports of entry, boosting the number of customs officers, and improving trusted traveler programs that expedite crossing times.
We need to be working with Mexico. We need to have a border that functions.
Wilson and others say this is critical for the U.S. to compete with rising economies around the globe. In El Paso, I'm Monica Ortiz Uribe.
Nearly 1 in 4 immigrants deported from the U.S. between 2010 and 2012 has a child who's a U.S. citizen. That's more than 200,000 people. Some 5,000 children of deported parents end up in foster care. Those parents often face daunting barriers to reuniting with their children. The Senate Immigration Reform Bill might offer relief to some of these families in the first of a 2-part series on deported parents. Jill Replegal from our Fronteras desk reports.
Hola.
It's a hot Monday afternoon in Tijuana. Danielle Bribiescas is headed out the gate of the Madre Asunta shelter for migrant women and children. Young, energetic, with an easy smile, Bribiescas is the shelter's full-time lawyer, helping deportees piece back together their lives and often their families. Today, he's taking a new client, 24-year-old Tanya Velasquez, to the local office of Mexico's Child Welfare Agency. Velasquez crossed into the U.S. illegally in 2006 and lived in Anaheim until her run-in with the police last year. She and her husband were stopped, and the officers found drugs on him. They both landed in jail. He's still behind bars in the U.S. on criminal charges. She pled guilty to a misdemeanor possession for personal use, even though she says she's never used drugs. Velasquez says she pled guilty because her lawyer told her she'd get out of jail immediately, and she thought she'd be with her 3-year-old daughter. But instead, she was moved to an immigration detention facility, where she spent 6 months before being deported to Mexico in May. She says immigration agents forced her to sign her deportation papers, a commonly alleged practice that's now the subject of an ACLU lawsuit. Velasquez's daughter has been staying with a friend in California for more than 8 months. And now that Velasquez is out of detention, she has one goal: to get her daughter back. To do that, she'll have to prove to an American judge that she can provide a suitable life for her child in Mexico. On the way to the Child Welfare Agency in Tijuana, Bribiescas, the lawyer, coaches Velasquez on the first steps. A place to live and a job, he says. Those are the first 2 things a deported parent needs in order to show they're serious about wanting their kids back. And they're difficult hurdles. Many show up here penniless and without any kind of identification, proof of work experience, or school records. But Velasquez seems determined. She already has a job at a restaurant, and she's saving up money to get her own place. Back at the shelter, Velasquez shows me photos of her daughter.
Ella es mi hija.
The girl poses in a princess dress with pink and yellow tulle. In the background are the palm trees and green grass of a Southern California suburb. What's she like, I asked.
Es una niña muy tierna, muy
simpática. She's very sweet, she says. Very friendly, very active, very intelligent. She goes on and on. The big problem with cross-border dependency cases is the parents and children often only have photos. It's often nearly impossible for them to see each other if the kids live in, say, Chicago, or if the parents have returned to hometowns in Mexico. So the emotional distance between them grows. Plus, parents can't be physically present for family court proceedings and meetings with social workers. Brubiesca says that's why he always recommends that parents stay near the border, in Tijuana or Baja California, because they actually might get to visit with their kids. Velasquez is terrified of losing the girl to an adoption in the U.S. It's unknown how many children of deported parents have been adopted, but it's a big anxiety for many deported mothers here in Tijuana.
La niña, nunca, nunca, mi hija.
Velasquez says she and her daughter have never been separated. There's nothing better than a child being with her parents, she says. Currently, immigrant parents with deportation orders have a very hard time proving they shouldn't be deported, even if they have U.S. citizen children who would be left behind. The immigration reform bill under debate in the Senate includes provisions that could delay or waive deportation for parents of U.S. citizen children. And the bill could give deportees like Velasquez, with minor criminal records and strong family ties in the U.S., a chance to apply to return to the U.S. legally. For now, Velasquez is focused on getting her daughter back with her in Mexico. Reporting from Tijuana, I'm Jill Replogle.
And we'll have part two in this series on cross-border reunification next week on Fronteras. You've been listening to Fronteras, a Corporation for Public Broadcasting-funded journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras is a collaboration of public radio stations KJZZ Phoenix, KPBS San Diego, KNAU Flagstaff, KNPR Las Vegas, KRWG Las Cruces, KUAZ Tucson, and KSTX San Antonio. Fronteras is online at fronterasdesk.org. We're also on Facebook. We invite you to join the conversation and post your thoughts about our stories. For headlines and updates, follow us on Twitter. Our handle is fronterasdesk. You can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. Our theme music was composed by Charanga Cakewalk. I'm Texas Public Radio's Crystal Chavez. Thanks for listening.